Blog Talk Radio.
No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspective, this is Revenge of the Birds.
Good evening, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio, and I'm your host, Jess Root. Thank you for listening tonight. And if you are listening to me after the fact via download or podcast, I welcome you as well. Thank you for taking the time to listen, to download the show. It's here, guys. It's here. We are 2 days away from the beginning of the Arizona Cardinals season. We know they are traveling to St. Louis. We know they are playing the St. Louis Rams. And you know what we don't know? Pretty much anything after that. We know what the personnel is going to look like. We know that there's a new head coach. There's a new talk. There's a new feel. But there's a lot of questions. There are a lot of questions heading into this season. Not the least of which is quarterback play, defensive play, offensive line play. What are we going to do? The scheduling. The Cardinals are in a very difficult division in the NFC West. I'm sorry, I'm thinking baseball, National League West. That would be a completely different sport. But in the NFC West, we have a couple of expected to be powerhouses in the Seattle Seahawks and the San Francisco 49ers, mainly because why? Well, look at who's their quarterbacks. Colin Kaepernick in San Francisco, who in less than a full season was pretty incredible. And Russell Wilson, who after a fairly shaky 5 first starts, put together one of the finest rookie seasons you'll ever see. And he doesn't have is the height, but you know what? He is a once in a lifetime prospect when it comes to quarterbacks. As much as it pains me to say, I am all in with Russell Wilson. I believe the kid is a star and that he will only get better. He's got the traits of what they want from every quarterback. He's tirelessly trying to get better. He wants things to be perfect. He's got the right attitude. He's all in with his team. You can tell the fact his team is behind him already. They see him as a leader on the team. He's only in his second year in the NFL. Well, I'm not going to talk any more about the opponents for the moment because we actually have a guest on the line here in a little bit who will join us. 3K from Turf Show Times, our very own SB Nation St. Louis Rams blog, and 3K will come talk to us. He's waiting to give us some talk about the Rams and talking about the upcoming season. I have a feeling this is going to be a great interview. But let's get started. Talking about coming up with this Sunday. We know what the depth chart looks like. We know the roster. We filled out the practice squad. We haven't talked since after the preseason game, after the Chargers game, where things kind of fell apart on us. Now, what do we have? We have our starters on the field. We know who our starters are going to be. Darren College over the left side slides into where Jonathan Cooper was. We got Paul Fanica, the former ASU Sun Devil. We have the roster set. The roster only has 4 wide receivers. Kerry Taylor, who initially looked like he was going to make the roster, even tweeted out that he would dream come true. Next day, oops, he got cut. He ended up on the practice squad. Still a great move. And so we know what the depth charts looks like. And there were some interesting things. There were a couple of waiver pickups in Bradley Soles. Offensive tackle was undrafted a season ago. Ended up playing with the Indiana Colts after he was signed off the practice squad. And he actually had some significant time. He played a little bit of guard, a little bit of tackle, and then he was brought in as a fifth tackle on the team. And one of the curious things about the roster, how the makeup is, so they've got six cornerbacks. That's fairly normal. They've got five running backs. Well, that makes kind of sense when in previous season there's been four running backs and a fullback. No fullback here, so five running backs, I guess, makes sense. But the two positions that kind of interesting are the offensive line, 10, and receivers, 4. Interesting balance. I know that at least receiver, it sort of makes sense, especially when you have other players at other positions you want. We're not going to see all four of those receivers on the field all at once frequently. We know that Bruce Arians likes to run 12 personnel. He likes to have the two tight ends in the game, which means you're only going to have two receivers out there. And once Rob Housler is healthy, you're going to see a lot of 11 personnel. And if it looks like it's four wide, guess what? One of those four wide is going to be Rob Housler. And so you're really only going to see the only three of those receivers. Jerome Brown isn't going to see significant time, I don't think. But still. And then you have the addition of Patrick Peterson to the offense. And there you go. It kind of makes sense. As for the offensive line situation, you now have three backup tackles. You have Nate Potter, you have Bobby Massey, and now Bradley Soles. Now, the team recently came out and said they're going to start working Nate Potter at guard in practice so that he can be a swing player for depth. That way, Earl Watford, their fourth-round draft pick this year, is not the only guard. And that's not necessarily true because center Mike Gibson, he also can play some guard, but it gives them a little bit more flexibility. It'll be interesting to see who is active and who is inactive because Bruce Arians has previously stated that they will only dress 8 linemen. They might have even said one time only dress 7, but probably 8, which means I would bet Earl Watford likely will be inactive, and probably Bobby Massey, I would guess, if they intend on Nate Potter being the depth guy. And what it may actually end up being is that, if I had to guess at this time, Nate Potter will be the guy that's inactive for the first couple of games until he get his feet underneath him. At guard, he'll be inactive. Bradley Soles will be inactive. And then you're left with Watford, Gibson, and Massey. But that's interesting enough. If you look across the board on the offensive side of the ball, we have a little bit of injury issue right now. Rob Housler had a high ankle sprain. It's one of the issues that came out of that San Diego Chargers game, and he's still not. He was ruled out today. In fact, he was ruled out for the game on Sunday, and perhaps a more pressing injury in occurrence that happened was actually today at practices when defensive end Calais Campbell, yes, that Calais Campbell, he suffered some sort of quadriceps injury, and he's listed as questionable for the game. It will be interesting to see if he is good to go. But what are the biggest questions heading into this season for the Cardinals? I said there are lots and lots and lots of questions. First of all, well, we brought in Carson Palmer. Obviously, the quarterback situation is an upgrade. How much of an upgrade is Carson Palmer? How much does he have left in the tank? What about the offensive line? Gave up a gazillion sacks last year, and more so, St. Louis, a season ago, that Thursday night game, they were 4-0, and they got beat down. They showed up to an alley fight without anything. They didn't know that the brass knuckles and the knives were coming out. They thought they were going to be in a clean boxing match. And Kevin Cobb pummeled to a pulp against the Rams then, 17-3 loss, sacked 9 times, hit I don't know how many other times. It was painful to watch that entire game. It's when the doors fell, the wheels fell off, the doors fell off, and all you were left with was up on blocks. An old beater car left up on blocks after it looked like this economy car might be something more after a 4-0 start, especially after that win in Foxborough. So next question is, what about the offensive line? Can the offensive line provide Carson Palmer with enough time to run the offense that Bruce Arians wants to do? Another question mark what is the defense going to look like this year? Ray Horton's defense looked awfully good a season ago. Ray Horton's not around anymore. It's now Todd Bowles. And so there's a bit of pressure, although there still hasn't been a lot of talk about this, because if you haven't noticed in the offseason, the whole goal about this offseason of change was all about the offensive side of the ball. They could have had Ray Horton as their head coach. He doesn't have a track record of developing quarterbacks. He doesn't have a track record of having they don't know. He's still unproven on that side of the ball. And while he says it's been confirmed at some level that he could have had Mike Tice on his staff, that he could have had Norv Turner on his staff, that wasn't enough to sway the ownership or now general manager Steve Keim into what they wanted to do. Enter Bruce Arians, lifelong assistant. He's 60 years old, 60 and sexy, as he says. He got his feet wet with a head coaching job a season ago, even though technically it wasn't his head coaching job. He stepped in for Chuck Pagano when he was diagnosed with cancer, filled in admirably, caught some lightning in a bottle. They won some games. They were in a fairly lightweight division, and they rattled off 11 wins on the year, went to the playoffs with a rookie quarterback and Andrew Luck. Oh, yeah, that guy Andrew Luck, number one overall pick, which made it his prospect was good enough. His star was bright enough that the Indianapolis Colts said bye-bye to their Colts player, to the Peyton Manning, after he missed the previous season with his neck surgery as a neck injury. Now, sorry about that. I had a little itch in my throat, and I didn't want to catch me coughing on the air. So I'll just tell you that I was coughing offline here. And Andrew Luck, the prospect of him coming out of college was enough that they decided, hey, we'll toss Peyton Manning to the side. Who cares if he's a Hall of Famer? Who cares about this? We caught lightning in a bottle once before with Peyton Manning, number one overall pick. And hey, this guy's a Peyton Manning style. Not saying style. He's not like Peyton Manning, but he's a Peyton Manning potentially caliber quarterback franchise guy that can lead your team for a decade or longer. So they dump Mr. Manning on his tush and just take Andrew Luck. Season later, after only two wins, they improved 11 in the playoffs. And now Bruce Arians got himself a head coaching job. Will Arians be able to maintain the confidence and the quote machine that he is in the face of adversity? He's talking a good game. He's talking about winning now. Players are talking about why not win the NFC West. Why not? Well, have you seen the teams ahead of him? Have you seen the 49ers? Have you seen the Seattle Seahawks? And those of you who are listeners who also frequent our site, revengeofthebirds.com, our SB Nation Arizona Cardinals community, check it out. I mean, most of you are already on the site, I would imagine. But, hey, there's a lot of Kool-Aid drinking going on. And I'm guilty of it, too. I'm a fan. I was a fan long before I ever was managers commuting and actually covering the Cardinals and writing about the Cardinals and working as media for the Cardinals. I've been a Cardinals fan since the early 90s, since Tim Rosenbaugh and Tom Tupa, Joe Bugel as head coach, or Gene Stallings, back when Ron Wolfley was a player in the NFL and a special teams fiend and knocking people out, and before his wordplay and his verbiage and his palaver, listen to the palaver, as in David Stern, NBA reference, gets on the air, gets fired up. You don't know what he's talking about. You don't know where he's going to go. He's now a broadcaster. I've been a fan forever. been through some bad times like everyone else. In fact, hey, if you're Cardinals, man, there's one thing you know, it's misery. And you still follow the team. And every single year, you know what happens to me? I get sucked in at the potential. I get sucked in. I do. I think, hey, if this can go right and this can go right and this can go right, hey, we could make some noise. This year, and I've said it more than once, I think this team could be a 5-11 team, a 5-11 disaster like last year. And it wouldn't be the same type of disaster. It'd more be more like the 5-11 disasters that we've seen here before. Or this could be a lightning in a bottle team. Get hot, have some good things happen, sneak some wins in that they are, I think they're very capable. I can see them winning as many as 11 games. Am I crazy? I don't think I am. I think it's going to fall somewhere in between. Our season preview, our season predictions for our staff are going to be published here tomorrow, Saturday, that is, as we're at Friday night. Again, you're listening to Revenge of the Birds Radio, your Arizona Cardinals radio show and podcast by Arizona Cardinals fans, for Arizona Cardinals fans, insider and outsider perspectives. And it's Friday evening. And here in Arizona, it's a little bit dusty there in the East Valley. Dusty, windy, little sprinkles. And I'm talking football to you. Yes, and I'm talking football. And thank you. Thank you for listening. I think this team has the potential to go as high as 11 wins. What's my prediction? 9. Do they make the playoffs? They miss it. I think that they'll start out slowly. I think they will win some close games, lose some close games, and then get a little bit hot there the latter half of the year, only to fall a little short. That's how I see this year playing out. But anyhow, I've rambled on enough. So what I have in store for you, and I've got them waiting on the line. So let's go ahead and talk about the Rams, St. Louis Rams. Season ago, they swept the Arizona Cardinals. One was in beatdown fashion, and the other was with Ryan Lindley at the helm, and he threw 2 touchdowns to the Rams. Yes, no, he didn't throw for a touchdown pass for the Cardinals in the entire season. However, Janoris Jenkins was his favorite receiver. Yes, Ryan Lindley scored negative 14 points. That's correct. So they returned to the scene of the crime last season, St. Louis Rams. They've got Jeff Fisher, second-year coach. No, he's not a second-year coach. Second-year coaching the Rams. He's got the pedigree. He's got the resume after all those years with Tennessee. Sam Bradford has an offensive coordinator again. He has an offensive coordinator now. He's got Brian Schottenheimer. He's expected to do more. And I've got lots of questions. So we've got, who do we have on the line? We have 3K from Turf Show Times. So let's bring him on. Let's bring him on. All right. Well, Cardinals fans, we have a special treat for you tonight as from Turf Show Times, our SB Nation Rams blog. We have one of the writers and one of the managers there. We've got 3K from Turf Show Times, and he's joining us to talk a little bit about his St. Louis Rams and what we can expect from them this Sunday in the season opener. How you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me, Jess. Although I worry every time I get introduced as a special treat, that's a bar that's hard to meet, both in terms of being special and being treat-like.
Hey, we're still fairly young here on the radio waves. So any guest, not to downplay your appearance, but so far guests are a treat every single time. So I don't mean to downplay that, but having a fellow blogger from one of our other sites for me is a treat because I know how much work I put in and I know how hard it is and I feel there are so much better fans and writers and managers of the other sites that I mean it's a treat to have someone else on. So tell us a little about your St. Louis Rams. Tell about the off season. What went well? What didn't go so well? What is you most excited about for this season?
I guess so. I'll take those one by one. I guess just to give some backstory. I think what's interesting about the Rams is that everybody's relatively aware that the expectations, while they aren't as high, certainly other teams in the NFC West, you look at Seattle and San Francisco, who are, you know, the power rankings that came out for SB Nation the other day had them 1-2. They're looking at things that in St. Louis we may not be looking at in terms of postseason runs. But you compare this team to the franchise, the way it was set up a couple years ago, and things certainly look better. You've got a QB in Sam Bradford who has the makings of a franchise quarterback. In terms of what's gone right, we've gone ahead and surrounded him with much better talent. Along the offensive line, we added Jake Wall. You add Tavon Austin through the draft, and Jared Cook, a tight end for free agency. So we've got some new pieces for the offense to be able to incorporate. I think what's interesting, though, is that the future portends so well for this team, because you still got two more first-round picks next year that the Rams picked up through the Robert Griffin III trade. So I don't feel that there's necessarily a rush to succeed in terms of, you know, conventional NFL success this season, but I think there is a bit of a question mark about how Sam Bradford's going to play this year. He's been good, if not very good for a quarterback as young as he is, with as few weapons, and as little chemistry as he's had year to year. He's had two different head coaches, three different offensive coordinators, three different quarterback coaches, if you count no quarterback coach in his first 3 years. So there's been no offensive consistency behind the sidelines for him. So adding the personnel and keeping offensive coordinator Brian Schottenheimer is only going to be a good thing. I think that puts some pressure on his shoulders to perform, but there's nothing I've seen that suggests that he won't be able to do it. So in terms of what's gone right, I think those are the big keys, is beefing up this offense to complement a defense that showed last year that it can really keep this team in pretty much any game. The only game the Rams weren't in last year was that Patriots game in London, but other than that, they were in the fight every single game they played last year, and that's a clear demarcation from previous years. In terms of what's gone wrong, I guess the biggest thing was probably Jawan Dunbar. He was finally a good piece at the second level of that defense to put next to James Laurinaitis, and he originally hit with a suspension for performance-enhancing drugs. The Rams actually cut him this week, so I think if you're looking for something that's gone wrong, there's not a ton there. They're an incredibly young team. They don't have a lot of, like I mentioned, not only expectations in terms of win-loss and season success, but individual success. They're trying to carve that out almost player by player. But certainly Jawan Dunbar probably marks the sole dark spot in terms of the offseason. And I'm sorry, but what was the third part? You said what went right, what went wrong, and what are we expecting? Was that it?
What are you most excited about for seasons coming up?
What am I most? I mean, it's easy, and I'm sure you know Cardinals fans have seen it too. It's Tavon Austin. I live in the D.C. area, so I know some people who saw him in high school when he was in Baltimore. But if there are people that didn't see him at West Virginia, you're missing kind of the future of the NFL. He's not big. He's not all that strong. He doesn't do things with contact, you know, running over guys or throwing shoulders into people. He is kind of this new breed of player that's small but insanely fast, just insanely fast and insanely quick. And combining those two, we've seen quick players in St. Louis. We had Wes Welker. Wes Welker, how quickly I merged the two, Danny Amendola. Yeah, so
when you think about it, New England thinks that Danny Amendola is Wes Welker. That's why they let Wes Welker go.
Yeah, Finkel is Einhorn. They've kind of merged to become the same person. But we had Danny Amendola, so we've seen quickness. And obviously we've had, you know, guys that we slotted in a punt returner. We took Dante Hall after his peak. So we've seen guys that were quick. But I think seeing this level of quickness and this level of speed, he's one of those players that's so quick and fast, defenders are used to taking angles to make a tackle that just aren't the right angles for him, because you have to gauge his speed differently and use a completely different angle. And we've seen it in college, certainly. I think the question is, against NFL competition, is that going to be a problem for defenders? And throughout the preseason, in limited opportunities, and certainly in schemes that didn't reveal what the Rams want to do with him this year, he showed that, you know, he can make the leap, and his speed isn't college speed, I guess you'd say. It really is a leap. So if there's one thing I'm excited about watching, it's going to be Tavon breaking out.
Actually, something interesting I was going to ask about Tavon Austin is, Tyrann Mathieu was asked about him the other day after practice. And the comment he made, now, it doesn't downplay his speed, but he said that Austin is quicker than he is fast. And now, correct me if I'm wrong. This is what he said. He said he does most of his work within the first 10 yards, not so much going deep, making plays that way, but doing his damage in the 10-yard range and then making big plays after that. And that the way you kind of combat him is kind of his plan, because we're going to see a lot of Matthew on Austin. Matthew is the Cardinals' primary nickel corner, so when there's a third receiver, he's going to come in into the slot. And I know Austin plays. How much does Austin play in the slot? Does he play outside at all, or does he line up pretty much inside?
Well, that's the thing, is in the preseason, they haven't really used him all that differently. He's done a little bit of slot work. He's done some outside. But, you know, if you watch Tavon Austin in college, he was a natural running back out of high school. And down the stretch for West Virginia this last year, they ran him more than they used him at wide receiver. Certainly, if you go back and watch that West Virginia-Oklahoma game, he destroyed them on the ground as a running back. He's got good vision, and he's got good feel for space. I think there's a question about how St. Louis wants to use him early on in his rookie season versus how they want to work him into their offense. I don't know that we know the answer to that, because, and Fisher was public about this, that they were essentially concealing what they wanted to do with him in terms of their offense. But you go back, and I mean, it's funny you mentioned Tyrann Mathieu. I actually know Tyrann Mathieu. He lives about two blocks from one of my family members. My family's from Louisiana. I saw Tyrann Mathieu in high school, saw him in college. I got a cousin that played running back at LSU, so I know the LSU program really well, and Tyrann's a phenomenal player. But what's funny is that if you go back and watch the tape of LSU West Virginia, Tavon Austin had a monster game. And you're talking about a defense that sent seven guys so far to the NFL. So it's not as if it was a competition issue, but Tavon was just that good, even though they knew what he was going to do. Now, in terms of Matthew's comments, I think for the most part he's right. I guess you would say he's got elite quickness and very good to elite top speed. I think that what's dangerous about him is that he's got both. I mentioned guys with quickness. We saw Danny Amendola. Danny Amendola doesn't have top speed. We've got Daryl Richardson as our starting running back. Very, very good quickness, very good acceleration, not great top speed, no jukes, anything like that. Tavon Austin kind of combines all that. Elite acceleration, very good to elite top speed, and then he's got some athleticism, some agility to break some tackles and loot guys, and that's rare that you see that combination of those kind of traits. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think Matthew's right. You get him the ball in space, kind of tight to the line, and allow him to work his way through a defense. But that's not something that most NFL offenses are built to do for anybody. But, you got the rise of guys like Percy Harvin and Dexter McCluster, Randall Cobb in Green Bay. There's going to be more and more of those guys coming out, DeAnthony Thomas at Oregon. I mean, there's a ton of guys in college I can mention. I'm a big draft guy. I don't want to waste time on that. But the reality is those offensive weapons, Denard Robinson, right? You're going to have to find ways to get these guys incorporated. And Tavon Austin is the object for the future of the St. Louis Rams.
Well, thanks, Matt. Has he been used vertically much?
Not really. We've got Chris Givens on the roster. Givens had a really good rookie season, especially where he was drafted fourth round out of Wake Forest. And he's almost limited as a vertical receiver. They tried to use him in some more versatile roles, working the middle of the route tree throughout the season to get him some more experience. They've done that through the preseason this year in limited snaps as a starter. So they've got a deep threat in Givens. They've got possession guys. Hopefully, the Rams are hopeful that Brian Quick really develops into a more consistent threat in terms of the possession game. He's still a little bit behind Austin Pettis, but the hope is that he'll get there. So the rest of the offense really, in terms of the skilled players at wide receiver, consists, and tight end, you can throw them in, because with Lance Kendricks and Jared Cook, those are decent threats. Cook could end up being a very good threat. But no, they haven't really used Austin deep. They've got Stedman Bailey on the roster too, who was his partner at West Virginia and worked a little bit deeper than Tavon did. I think it's more a matter of using him on slants and hitches, screens, things like that, to keep him tight to the line, put some blockers in front of him, and let him weave his way through the field.
Well, we're talking to 3K from Turf Show Times. He's given us some great information about the Rams, who the Arizona Cardinals will be playing this Sunday. Again, you're listening to Revenge of the Birds Radio. And we've been talking about Tavon Austin, the offseason. How much of one of my writers, Seth Cox, did a great piece with some film, with some screenshots based on what the Rams have been doing in the preseason offensively. And actually the guy that seemed the player that look like is going to give the Cardinals more fits. It's not going to be Givens necessarily. It's not going to necessarily be Austin. They definitely are their own threats. But tight end Jared Cook is the guy that the Cardinals are going to have fits with, mainly because we don't have Darrell Washington for the first 4 weeks of the year. Yes, Carlos Dansby can do some cover, but he has lost a little bit. Jasper Brinkley has not been great in coverage. How much are they going to count on Jared Cook this year?
Well, I think early it's going to be pretty heavily. Lance Kendricks has been sidelined with an injury. I know you guys have seen plenty of him over his first couple of years with the Rams. Cook he's a bit of an interesting case. He's not a good blocker. Tennessee actually lined him out wide receiver more than they did at tight end. He's big. He's got great straight line speed. And, you know, for a tight end that's as big as he is that can carve up linebacking cores, I think it's an interesting mismatch. He, maybe more than Tavon Austin, is a bit more difficult to design for because you've got to give him the opportunity to kind of get up the seam and work some post routes, work downfield towards the line. So I can understand why you guys would say that he's going to be difficult to cover, but I can also see why most teams are going to say that because he adds another dimension that a lot of teams don't have at tight end.
It's actually kind of what we hope we see for the Cardinals this year with tight end Rob Housler. It looks like he's probably going to miss the game on Sunday. He's got a high ankle sprain. He's recovering from the third game in the preseason. And that's exactly the type of thing that we hope we get from him because he's got that great straight line speed. He's a 4.4 guy in the 40. He's big. Well, he's tall. He's a matchup nightmare. And so what we get to see is, hey, that's a guy that actually knows how to do it. Well, Housler hasn't quite done it yet. Obviously, last year, the Rams were very, very tough in the division. 4-1-1. Cardinals had the nightmare game on Thursday night, which kind of set the ball rolling for everything that went wrong. Cardinals go 4-0 to start the season. Then the Thursday night football game in St. Louis, Kevin Cobb gets destroyed, 9 sacks, more hits, and it was the next week against Buffalo when he gets hit late in the game, and then his season is over.
Right.
Can we expect that sort of pass rush dominance again? Was that more something that was the defensive side of the ball on the Rams, or was that just abject failure on the offensive line on our side?
Well, if I'm being fair, it was both. But as a Rams fan, certainly the defensive line is more than care. It really is the core of the team. The Rams actually went ahead and signed Eugene Sims, a backup defensive end, to an extension, and they've got the entire defensive line locked up through next year. And outside of Jermell Cujo, a backup defensive tackle, they've got everybody else for 2015. Tons of talent. They brought in Kendall Langford through free agency last year to play alongside Michael Brockers, who really had a very underrated rookie season at defensive tackle. And obviously for those of the LSU fans on the Cardinals side that saw a lot of Tyrann Mathieu, they may remember Brockers at LSU, a great anchor for a run defense and is definitely strong enough to bring pressure and collapse pockets. You know, as a defensive tackle, even though he played defensive end in high school, and I know I keep going back to high school, but I love high school. Jess, I'm from Texas. I grew up on high school football. I actually saw Rob Housler in high school. My wife's from El Paso, and I went out and saw a Judson game that he was playing at. I don't even remember him playing in it, but I think that's one of those weird things about Texas high school football is you end up going to a game, and, oh, look at that, one of the guys that was actually playing in that game made the NFL, and I don't even remember. I do remember him more at his college ranks. I went to North Texas, so I saw a bunch of Sun Belt football, and obviously at Florida Atlantic, I saw more of him than I'd care to remember. he can play. In terms of that defensive line, though, I mean, it really is stacked. You got Chris Long and Robert Quinn. I'll put it like this. There's a reason why the Rams tied for the most sacks in the NFL last year, and unlike the Broncos who, you know, lost Elvis Dumervil, and they've got Von Miller on suspension. Everybody's there for the Rams, and they've added a guy in Alec Ogletree and brought in a veteran that used to be with the Rams and Will Witherspoon to back them up at linebacker. The cornerback situation makes it easier for that defensive line to get pressure because you've got Janoris Jenkins, Cortland Finnegan, and an improving Trumaine Johnson playing corner. I think the real difficulty last year at filling out the defensive safety, I don't know that that's finished. I think they've still got work to do over the next 2 years to add some talent at the back of the defense. But in terms of what the defensive line can do, I mean, anytime you give up 9 sacks it's got to be a combination of both, right? It's got to be a combination
of the
quality of the defensive line and the lack thereof of the offensive line. But you guys saw your offensive line more than I did last year. I think I watched 5 Cardinals games, so you guys would speak more to that. But I would definitely say you can't shortchange this Rams defensive line.
Definitely. Were there any other games that did even come close to that in terms of just hit after hit after hit?
No.
Okay. That's really kind of an interesting thing, because if you look back at who was responsible for the different sacks, of those 9 sacks, 7 of those sacks were given up, or there's the guys that were given credit for having given up those sacks. 7 of those sacks are gone, because Bobby Massey, who was awful to start the season, he's sitting the bench right now behind Eric Winston. DeAnthony Batiste, well, he's not in the NFL right now, and understandably so. Levi Brown comes back to that place, and then Adam Snyder, our right guard, he is no longer with the team. And so 7 of the 9 sacks were given up by guys that aren't going to be in the starting lineup. I'm not going to say that you guys aren't going to get quarterback at all, but the offensive line is improved, and Carson Palmer is much quicker about getting the ball out. I'm really interested in seeing how that dynamic works. I was actually on another show earlier today, on another Rams radio show, and one thing that was interesting, because they asked me kind of what the key for the Cardinals offensively were going to look for, and I said what they want to do offensively, other than they're going to take about 6 shots down the field, big, huge bomb plays at some point. They're going to take their shots. But the play action is going to be what the Cardinals will kind of be good at if they can have at least a semblance of a threat of the running. And the guys I was talking to on the air said that's a big issue for the Rams defense, is they have guys that like to bite on the play action. Is that something that we could see coming down to things where if they bite on play action, that we're going to see some big plays?
I think it depends. I think it depends on how much carries over from the preseason. Certainly, if you look at what's gone on to this point in the offseason, they have not played the play action very well. But I think it's a fair question to wonder how much of that is because the defense is trying to key in on the run. The last couple of years, outside of last year, but you go back to 2011, 2010, the run defense was really, really, really bad. And I think there's still some lingering discontent among the defense, who knows that they're good enough to play it, certainly now with Brockers up front kind of anchoring the centerpiece of that run defense. Even though they have James Laurinaitis, who's one of the more notable middle linebackers in the NFL, he's played a little bit more Tampa 2 and kind of dropped into pass coverage more often than not. And that frees up guys like Jawan Dunbar last year, and this year it's going to be on Alec Ogletree, some of Will Witherspoon, and certainly on the cornerbacks to come in and pinch down on the run. But I think there's a question of how do they implement that in a NFL regular season now, as opposed to the preseason. Last year, it wasn't the biggest concern. I think they played the play action relatively well throughout the season. But, yeah, this preseason, it certainly has been one of those issues that is that stands out as something they need to fix before this season gets going.
The running game. Steven Jackson's gone, kind of a new era of running backs. You've got, I guess, I would consider them somewhat unproven.
That's being nice.
And Patrick Peterson the other day after practice said, what did he expect from St. Louis? Is kind of the MO that they've had, run, 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 and then take their shots. Is that something that we're going to see, or has the offense changed now with the pieces you have in place? And what do you expect from your running game?
Yeah, I think, well, like you said, just like the personnel, the system itself is a bit unproven. I think the key about the Rams and how they ran last year and when they ran was the fact that they had Steven Jackson. When you've got a guy like Steven Jackson, you've got to give him enough carries to get into a game, right, to find a rhythm. He doesn't need the best offensive line to affect a game, especially when he was younger. But he's just got to get enough carries to get his feet under him, knock a couple defenders around, and then kind of work himself into a hole. He's one of those guys. He's kind of the last, and I guess not the last, being a Rams fan, I get trapped inside the bubble sometimes myself, but he really is a throwback every down running back. He can play every down in multiple ways. moving forward now that he's gone, I mean, running back is probably the most, along with safety, both safety positions, is probably the most talent-depleted position on the roster. They named Daryl Richardson, who was the backup to Steven Jackson last year. He is now the starter. I wrote a piece for Tertial Times about, I don't know, 2-3 weeks ago that noted the irony that Daryl Richardson is probably the least talented running back on the roster. But it kind of fits, given the fact that the Rams haven't had a great offensive line. They're still kind of working on putting a unit together that they feel comfortable with. And that being the case, it makes sense to have a guy who's got Daryl Richardson's skill set, which really is two things, acceleration and discipline. If you want him to hit the B gap, he's going to hit the B gap, and he's going to hit it as fast as he can possibly get between taking the handoff and getting to the line. The other guys behind him, Isaiah Pede, who was the second-round pick out of Cincinnati last year, Zach Stacy, SEC standout out of Vanderbilt, and even Benny Cunningham out of Middle Tennessee State, who's really impressed this preseason, one of the bigger preseason performers that we've had. They're just not there. I mean, there's a reason that Daryl Richardson won the starting job. But if you're looking for talent or if you're looking for fantasy points, yeah, right now the Rams' backfield is not a place that you want to look.
All right. Getting towards as we, and I really, really appreciate it, but we've had great conversation. Again, you're listening to Revenge of the Birds Radio. We're talking to 3K from Turf Show Times, our SB Nation St. Louis Rams blog. Before we get to the game part and the prediction of what you're expecting, how worried are you? Now, granted, living in the D.C. area doesn't affect you as much. Do you expect the Rams to move to Los Angeles the next couple of years?
You know, it's one of those long-term things. There's so many different aspects at stake. The NFL is bigger and more profitable and therefore more powerful than ever before. So the kinds of franchise moves that we've seen in the past are much, much harder to take place because now even a smaller market team like St. Louis that doesn't have the entrenched fan base of other franchises is still way more valuable than the top franchises were 20, 30 years ago. So it's a much different environment. I think if I'm looking at things specific to the Rams, and I don't want to hold an economic discussion and get it all political, anything like that. If there are things specific to the Rams, I think their lease with the CVC gives them enough time. They got essentially a year and a half before the lease gets close to closure, and they've got to figure out, okay, well, how are we going to figure out where this team is going to play in the future? What they want to do. There's essentially three options. They can renovate the current stadium, which is hard to do. The city wants to lean on that as an option because it's understandably cheaper and it's in a good place. It's right along the river in the middle of downtown, and it offers them a central place to bring everybody for the game. You've got the option to build something new, and obviously the difficulty there is finding a suitable site along with the issue of money and how expensive it would be. The clause that they have is so generic, it needs to be in a top percentile of all stadiums, but it doesn't really define what that means for the current lease. So assumedly, if you're going to build a new stadium, it's going to have to kind of match that. Otherwise, why would they want to leave if any other suitable renovation would put them there? So you look at some of the best stadiums around the league, and you're talking about probably $1 billion, maybe less. I mean, it depends on what the current dollar situation is for stadium, but you're looking at sinking a ton of money into a really, really, really impressive facility for a city that doesn't have one of the biggest economies in the country. And obviously the third option is moving out. And I think there are other teams that make more sense for a move to Los Angeles. That being said, I became a Rams fan back in the late 80s when they were in Los Angeles. I don't have a problem with it. I would throw this as a one-off, kind of my ultimate dream, my bucket list that I've always wanted to check off. I grew up in Dallas, Texas. I hate the Cowboys. I would love to see Dallas become a two pro football team and have the Rams and the Cowboys. I know it's impossible to see. It's impossible. I get that. But look, nobody thought the Brooklyn Dodgers would move out of New York. Nobody thought the Braves would move out of Milwaukee. I'm just saying, man, having the Rams in Dallas would be a dream come true. Otherwise, I say screw it. Keep them where they're at. The people in St. Louis love them. Let's roll with what we got.
Great. Now, come down to the game. Prediction-wise, I expect to see something. The Cardinals defense, still a very physical group. The Rams defense, very physical group, kind of what Jeff Fisher's brought to the team. I the guys I was talking to earlier today, I don't know if I could pin down a prediction. Naturally, I think the Cardinals are going to win, but And I know you're going to say something different, but I think even though the Rams are definitely favored for the game, I think this is a good kind of measuring stick for both teams kicking off a season in which neither one are expected to come out of the West by any means, but both teams are going to be very physical, and it's going to come down to two things: the big plays down the field or turnovers. And I think it could go either way. I think it'll be a real close game until late in the game. There's going to be a big play or two that make the difference. What do you expect from this game on Sunday?
Well, I think it's tough. I've watched two of y'all's preseason games so far this year, and I didn't get a great sense of the identity that you guys are going to bring to the table this year. Obviously, you got a brand new head coach, Bruce Arians, and not only new for you guys, his first position after years and years and years in football. I actually watched the Dallas game, and then I watched that San Diego game the week after, so I missed the Green Bay and Denver game, so I didn't get a great feel. I have checked in on Revenge of the Birds a couple other times. Yeah, I snoop around. I keep my eyes on ROTV from time to time to get a little intel. But, yeah, I think those are such big questions in terms of head coach and quarterback that, yeah, you get a sense of philosophy and you get a sense of character, right? But you don't get a good sense from the preseason of how those things are going to materialize, especially when it matters. So even for you guys, there are some questions. I think for the Rams, the question marks are way bigger. Sam Bradford's finally got, as I mentioned earlier, he's got coaching consistency from year to year. That's something he hasn't had. He's got real weapons and an improved piece on the offensive line in Jake Long. If Jake Long comes anywhere close to the kind of quality he was 2-3 years ago with Miami, he's the best lineman that the Rams have had since Orlando Pace. You throw in the fact that they've got Tavon Austin, the best offensive weapon they've had since The Greatest Show on Turf. So those questions are just huge, huge question marks. And you mentioned the fact that there aren't expectations. The New York Post today had the Rams going to the Super Bowl.
Nuts! Holy cow!
nobody would think that, right? It doesn't make sense. But here's the thing: the NFL, the level of parity in the NFL is insane, and the question marks for the St. Louis Rams are so big and so unanswered. I think it's almost impossible to know what we're going to get. I think the problem for the Rams is more so than earlier years. I think it's going to be much more volatile swings. I think we're going to get swings where we see this Rams team play really, really good, put up points, put up 30, into the 40s possible points when everything clicks. And then you're going to see games where everything falls apart because you're leaning on guys like Jared Cook and Tavon Austin, Brian Quick in his second year, that have so little experience in the NFL that there are going to be games where they don't really have it all together and certainly aren't in sync with Sam Bradford because this is their first season all together. So that's really my concern. In terms of this game specifically, there's a couple things I'm looking at. Number one, we're at home. That bodes well. Number two, the Rams are incredibly healthy right now. We haven't had really any health issues throughout the preseason that didn't exist beforehand. We didn't lose any guys through the preseason is what I'm saying. So that's another good thing. I think the third thing is you've got coaching consistency. So everybody knows Jeff Fisher. Everybody knows Brian Schottenheimer on the offensive side. We brought in a defensive coordinator in Tim Walton. We didn't even have one last year. So in some senses, that's an improvement and not really just a change on the defensive coaching staff. But I think there are a couple of factors that are working in the Rams' favor. I'm not big on predicting wins and losses. This is like I grew up in casinos, Jess. I grew up in Louisiana where we've got casinos. I never bet sports, and I certainly never bet the NFL. There's so much parity and there's so much unpredictability. Like you said, a lot of times it just comes down to big plays and turnovers. I'm confident that the Rams, with their defense, can create some of those. I'm certainly concerned with y'all's defense that you guys seem to, and especially if Teron gets going. I've seen this kid since he was 17 years old. He can make plays. I think the key is kind of getting into a groove and developing some momentum. This is one of those games, and I think you guys saw it last year with that first game. The Rams' defense really got going, and the confidence built up, and there was a sense that no matter what happened, that the defensive line was going to get pressure, things were going to collapse, and they kind of took over that game. I'd like to see that happen. I'd certainly like to see that happen in the first half and really get everything clicking, and who knows, maybe we get a big play from Tavon Austin early on and things, go in our favor and we're able to hang on relatively easy in the second half. I think that would be an optimal result.
Well, great. I really appreciate, this has been a great conversation, far longer than I thought it was going to end up, but some great stuff. I appreciate it, 3K. This is Revenge of the Nerds.
Are you saying my answers are too long, Jeff?
No, it was great. It was far more great information than I ever expected at all. This has been great. Compared to what I gave you on your show last night, I'm ashamed.
Oh, come on, man. You're, Jess, you're a special treat. Anytime we have you on, man, you're a special treat.
Well, Revenge of the Birds Radio. Okay, Cardinals fans, take a visit over to Turf Show Times. We've already got we've got a couple of crossblog posts up there right now where we're asking each other questions for the Cardinals fans, for the Rams fans. We've got our five questions post coming up in the next couple of days. I actually need to write up those questions for 3K right now. But head on over to Turf Show Times. Give those Rams fans some love. That's a team there of the three evils in the division. The Rams are definitely the least of the three evils. And likewise, give my man 3K a follow on Twitter. He's at 3K_. And hey, you will not be disappointed. I really appreciate it. Have a great night and good luck on Sunday.
Hey, thanks, Jess. Good luck, guys.
So, what do you guys think? That was truly, it was a great interview. 3K bringing it with his Rams information. And I'll tell you, I'm excited, I'm exhilarated, and I'm scared a little bit. I'm a little bit worried because there is deep down inside of me, there's this knot in my belly that says, this could get ugly. I don't know what the fans are going to say. I really don't. What if the team hits some adversity? Very much, at least our Revenge of the Birds community online at that revengeofthebirds.com, that the overriding sense is optimism and trust in Bruce Arians and Steve Keim. How long will that go? What if we come out of the gate 1-4? It's possible. How much optimism will be around? Will it go to indifference? Will it turn to, oh, Arians is a bum. Oh, he's like Buddy Ryan. He's just talking the talk, giving some good quotes. He's no different. I'll be interested to see how that dynamic. Obviously, winning helps everything. If the Cardinals win, and I said it on the show when I was actually on the Turf Show radio as a guest, talking to 3K about the Cardinals. I personally won't be disappointed. Like, I won't think – not disappointed. I'm always disappointed every time the Cardinals lose. And so I'm used to being disappointed. But what would be a failure for this season? I think that the failure for the season would be not being competitive and having it turn into last year, where they just can't – these things kind of snowball. Carson Palmer gets hurt. Drew Stanton plays. He turns out to be not terribly effective. Larry Fitzgerald has a repeat of the numbers he had last year, or the defense turns into a bottom or below average defense. Now, what will keep it from being a failure? Anything really. Are they competitive? Are they getting some wins? Are they close to 500? I think is kind of what everyone wants to see at a minimum. People want to win. That's what the team wants to do. But if the Cardinals can stay in the picture and be competitive and be in the playoff picture for the entire season down to the last week or two, then I'll be happy. I'll be pleased with that. I won't be satisfied. I won't be thrilled. But I'd be okay with that because it's something to build on. And then come the offseason, well, what are they going to do at quarterback? Are they going to draft one? How long are they going to ride Carson Palmer? Or do they think that Drew Stanton's the guy? Or what's the future of Ryan Lindley? What if Carson Palmer puts up huge numbers? There's a lot of things to think about. In the meantime, you're probably going to be listening to us, and it's Saturday or Sunday. Just know, Sunday is week one. We're going to get football that counts from our Arizona Cardinals. Where's that teenage girl squeal? Yeah. There's fist pumps. There's excitement. The beer's going to be flowing. TVs are going to be on. Feet up on chairs. Barbecue, pizza, all sorts of stuff. I'm ready for this season. Are you? We're going to close up shop tonight. Cardinals fans, thank you for listening. And once again, this is Revenge of the Birds Radio. I'm your host, Jess Root. You can find us at revengeofthebirds.com. If you want to download the show, you can find us on Stitcher Radio. We are on iTunes. And hopefully the next time we talk, it will be 1-0. We'll be back with you probably Tuesday night to recap the game. Ta-ta. You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.